Good evening and welcome, dear friends. What a blessing it is on my screen to see all of you present. It just enlivens my heart. So behind me, the Christ candle is lit as a symbol of the light that is in the world. And I can see and feel it among all of your presences. So we're here this evening to listen and to hear, to awaken, and to yield the self, to place ourselves under the canopy of the work. And this conscious placement is a form of self-remembering, a collective wish, a collective focus for all of the forces of regeneration to come down and embrace us. Here we are as willing receptacles. Can it even be said that we will be in the kingdom of heaven? May it be so. So our opening reflection comes from Bernadette Roberts. And perhaps we do not think of Bernadette Roberts as a writer and a teacher of cosmology. And yet, have not the mystics of all time had a view of the all, the meaning behind all of the contemporary forms and schema that have always been present, all of the technical understandings of the world at the time? The commonality was that they could see the all, and beyond and above and through all forms of expression. So this passage comes from her book, The Real Christ. The divine became visibly manifested in a material body. Saint Irenaeus, perhaps the most enlightened of the fathers, commented that man was a microcosm of the universe, and that in the process of taking on human nature, the incarnation, the Logos united itself to the whole cosmos. Thus, along with Paul, Irenaeus referred to Christ as the sum of creation. If the Logos was the sum and soul of existence, the cosmos was its body, its manifestation. Thus, the Logos was the soul of the universe, just as man's body is the visible form of his soul. Just as the Logos is the animating principle of the cosmos, it is also of the rational soul of man. Christ's human nature was a part of the vast body of the cosmos. Logos, while present in the man Jesus, was simultaneously present everywhere else in the universe, vivifying and directing it with its life-giving power. Amen. So whatever schema we might be know as the working of the cosmos, by virtue of the incarnation, it is forever imbued with the deifying power of Christ. As humanity, our goal, so to speak, is to become conscious participants in this unifying power. And thus we place ourselves under the canopy of the work. Under this canopy, there is great tranquility and wonder at the grandeur of our cosmos, at its unfoldings and infoldings. So let us prepare to receive the cosmic influences that await our reception. To have our emotional center enlivened with valuation for these conscious influences. And to allow them to reveal themselves directly to us without intermediary. We do this for the good of all creation. May each of us, through the silence, through our sharings, our readings, through divine grace itself, receive a word that is exactly what we need to hear for our particular journey this evening. We hand over the complexities of our day, knowing that they are particular gifts. We hand over the plans for tomorrow, knowing that they will be addressed. We hand over the anxieties and small fears of our hearts, knowing that they are known. We lay down our constructed life in order to yield to the divine human life. And we stand unencumbered before God and one another. So we will now view our reading for this evening, which comes from today's email. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. The entire world is maintained through sacrifice. Every entity on every scale of existence participates in the universal exchange of energies, supporting and being supported by the existence of others. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. The entire world is maintained through sacrifice. Every entity on every scale of existence participates in the universal exchange of energies, supporting and being supported by the existence of others. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. The entire world is maintained through sacrifice. Every entity on every scale of existence participates in the universal exchange of energies, supporting and being supported by the existence of others. Individually members one of another, and being supported by the existence of others. And so it is. So I invite you, as you are moved to do so, to share what it is that you received from this passage. Yes, Greta, please.
I was struck by two things in this reading. One was the word sacrifice, which I have always loved, since it means to make sacred. And the second was testing. It reminded me of the work and how the work says, these are exercises you can do. These are ways you can look at things, but you'll only see their utility when you test them for yourself. And you'll choose among them by testing them for yourself. And the way that we can work in the work as a sacrifice is to continually take higher being as our aim. And this making sacred of our actions really supports other people in the world. And that's what I got. Thank you, Mary.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you, Greta. Thank you. Esther, please.
Hello. I heard the exchange of energies and supporting and being supported by the existence of others. So I love that, supporting and being supported. So my presence here is, in a small way, supporting the whole, which I love. And then, of course, I'm being so supported by all of your presence, so that exchange of energy, as I receive, I also give back the abundance of finer energies. So I'm very grateful for this presence.
Yes. Thank you, Esther. Thank you. Catherine Nichols, please.
I also heard being supportive and supported by, and what I also really liked was being in the one body, but having different functions. And that gives me greater gratitude for the diversity of all of our members and valuation for the fact that we have different things we contribute to one another and to the world. And I just really appreciate that view. We're not all just cookie cutters of each other. And it's something that the world needs, is each one of us.
Each Thanks. One of us. Amen. Thank you, Catherine. Now it's time for a man to speak. I know that there is some gentleman out there that received something from this passage. But we will also take you too, Jill.
Uh-huh. Surprise.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff, unless you would like to speak.
Well, that was me.
Very good.
So, this may sound a little weird, but what the image that came to me with that was the biological reality of like aspen trees and mushrooms that have root systems and being that goes well beyond what anybody can see.
Yes.
It goes for miles and miles and miles. And you think it's one little thing over here, but it's connected deep underground, but very, surely to all the other parts of that system. and they all contribute to the whole, and yet they look like there's a tree over here, there's a tree over there, there's a mushroom here, there's a mushroom there. So it's just the fanning out of the connection is not obvious to everyone, but it does in fact exist and is buried deep underground and can't necessarily be seen unless you dig down and look for it.
Indeed. It's a good way of expressing our world today too. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. And Sharon, our steward. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Well, I heard a lot in this passage. The first thing that I heard was that my body is a sacrifice, and I've felt that way for a while, and that is, you know, just that it's not my hands, it's not my feet, it's not my mouth, it's, you know, it's in service to something much higher that I can't even understand. And then secondly, I heard those, that whole idea of that Jesus poured himself out like a libation. Mm-hmm. And that idea that we pour ourselves out into the world and to each other, and it's reciprocity. So there's continual recycling. God is a wonderful recycler. And this idea of, you know, things we pour it all out, and then we have more energy.
Yeah.
We have more force because of that. And that is great comfort. And then that third thing was this idea that we all, in all existence, help each other. And for me, the idea of the conscious circle of humanity is such a precious idea. It transformed the idea of the kingdom of heaven for me, of conscious circle of humanity. And this week I had an experience of opening up one of those little contemplative outreach spiral binders called Simplicity.
Mm.
And Kate, who often comes to me in different ways, I opened it up and there was Kate talking about the simplicity of dying, mm-hmm. knowing that you're dying, and how that simplifies everything. And in the work we say, you know, hold our death in front of ourselves, you know, to really work like our house is on fire, etc. And it was such a gift. I just, I've read that over and over this week to remember that the people in the conscious circle of humanity that used to be people, or the souls, are completely sending us little thoughts and little memories and little pieces, like open up that book. And, and I find that so sweet and a very, very deep. It's a very deep feeling for me.
Yes, indeed. Oh, thank you for that gift, Sharon. Thank you. Marnie, please.
Hi, friends. I heard something about how we're all members of one another, and it made me think, I wish there were some way to visually represent the web of humanity so that I could see the ways, visually see in some way how I am connected to others, whether it's someone who lives on my block or someone who lives halfway across the world, that we've interacted with each other in some way. And I think if we were able to somehow visually depict the web of human relationship, how we flow in and out of each other in ways we don't know and don't understand, I think it would be incredibly beautiful. And it's something I would love to see. Thanks.
Indeed. Thank you, Marnie. And we'll close our sharing with Jack and Jackie.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Oh, good, Jackie. Good to see you.
I had a delightful sharing this morning with my work partner over the idea of reciprocal maintenance. And it allowed me to actually think about the vertebrates and invertebrates in particular, and also the plant life that support me, for the most part, in my unconsciousness of their sacrifice for my life, that we are dependent upon them to live. And I thought about the archangels, and I actually have a wish that I will remember these animals and these beings that give up their lives for us, that I might also have a connection with the archangels that I'm feeding. And I believe this, that this is important for us to feel this reciprocal maintenance. It's becoming more critical. And perhaps that's one of the gifts of the times that we are entering, when we have to be as conscious as we are capable of being and recognize this web of connections that we have essentially for one another. I could feel some remorse about not being grateful prior to this, but that's useless suffering. So that is my wish going forward. Thank you for this beautiful offering for this.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you. Well, tonight we continue our study of cosmology through its orders and laws, its scale, its elegance, its mystery, moving from influences and impressions into the principle of reciprocal maintenance. And I am very pleased to introduce Bev McCune, who is going to take us on this journey of discovery. So, Bev.
Thank you, Marianne, and hi, everybody. So this week we got to work with impressions and influences. There are certainly a lot to choose from these days, many that really pull for our attention. So I'm really interested in hearing how this went for you. I'm going to just share my screen so we can see what the actual homework was. So we began with this beautiful image. So take an honest, uncritical inventory of the relative amount of A, B, C influences and impressions you choose to receive in a given week, perhaps even noting the amount of time involved with each and the effect on your being. What do you learn? What feeds your being and what depletes it? What do you wish? And practice self-remembering at least once every day. So who would like to begin? Sue, please. Or Rusty?
It's me, and I'm putting my video back on. Hi. So I'm going to start by saying that I'm a teacher, and right now my school is in session, and we are meeting in person, and it is very, very challenging. Actually, I think all teachers, no matter how you're doing it, it's very challenging. So kind of at the end of last week, I kind of took stock and noticed that there were a lot of really complaining eyes operating a lot, grumpy, resentful, complaining eyes about just how hard it was and how challenging. And so that was something I wanted to observe again this week. And then looking at the influences, I definitely saw lots of A influences. Starting from the moment I get up in the morning, I wake up with my phone, wakes me up. That's where my alarm is that I wake up. I grab my phone, I look at the weather, and then it's sort of off to the races, you know, it's like, and so, and I'm going to say that I don't think that being informed of what's going on in the world is a bad thing. I think it's part of being a good householder. However, it really reaches a point sometimes where it's less of being informed and it starts to feel like I'm gorging, and it leaves a bad taste. And Yeah. So that's what I was noticing. So this week I made an effort to, in the morning when I'm eating my breakfast, instead of looking at my phone, a Sufi friend of mine had just given me a book on the divine names of God. And so I was reading this book while I was eating my breakfast, and I was reading about divine patience and divine compassion. And it was such a better way to start my day. And I really feel like it helped me go into my job with, just a higher energy. And it was a better week, I think. So it was really helpful.
That's wonderful. That's a really good testimony to the way we begin our days. Because when we can begin the day with some form of B or C influence, then it does. It totally shifts how the day feels. And that was just a great example of that. Thank you for sharing that with us, Sue. Appreciate it. Now, I know we can't live without impressions, so everyone must have had impressions this week. Rebecca, please.
Good evening, everyone. What I realized, well, the experience I had this week of sea influences was I have a gangly, awkward-looking, big shrub that is trying to be a tree in my backyard. And when it rains, it comes out with these little panicles of tiny white flowers, which are very subtle. You don't necessarily notice them, except that the fragrance is so, it's so wonderful. And I ended up dragging my various household members and my neighbors. I said, do you want to feel better? Come over here and smell this tree. I mean, it just lifts me right up. And the other thing was that I have some wind chimes that I just got this year. I've been wanting wind chimes for years and having a very difficult time making a decision about which wind chimes to get. You go online, you can listen to all of them. But I picked out a set of wind chimes that I love, and they're hung in my backyard so that I can hear them easily. And when I feel much as if I am receiving sea influences in some way, it's just, and I think it's so important that we all find those things that lift us right out of our world of A influences, at least from time to time, and just renew us and remind us of their existence. And the only other thing I would have to share, which kind of came out of last week's discussion, and I think it was Nicole who started that part of the discussion, which is that my life is very full of A influences. And especially in the last few weeks, I've just taken on this, you know, I've got a list and I have things I want to find out about, and I'm making phone calls and getting phone calls and researching and all this stuff. And at the same time, not that I'm always successful at it, but as we talked about last week in terms of less important things and more important things, and the point was made that less important things, or what we call less important things, which in this case I would call A influences, become more than that depending on the attention that we bring to them. So that even though they are A influences, which are absolutely necessary for us to deal with in our day-to-day lives, if we can just come at them with sort of a simultaneous feeling that this is what I have to deal with, they are of this level of importance, you know, can I bring my attention to them in a way that allows a higher or wider perspective, it feels as if it lifts them. You know, I mean, I don't completely understand how the A and B, you know, work, but I just have a feeling that that's very important and allows me to participate, do what I have to do in the world of A influences, and yet feel as if they're part of my spiritual life. They're my lessons for the day. They are my, you know, the parts that I have to get through. And so I for me, it was sort of an ongoing, like bringing last week's discussion into this week, as we sort of called them certain things last week and then they became certain things this week. But that's it.
Yeah. So what I heard and what you were saying is that when in the midst of our lives, when we're dealing in A influences, if we stay connected with the vertical, it brings a whole different feeling and sense of life. And I think we radiate to others differently, and it changes the way we see life. It's kind of as if we're in life but not of it, right?
Exactly. And it had an influence on how I spoke to people. Like, yes. Calling people, find out, you know, yes, but it's done on a level that is hopefully higher than what it could be.
Yes, more conscious. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So we're grounding the vertical in the horizontal. And we become the point there where the vertical meets the horizontal. And also when you were talking about the smells and the taste and things like that, those moments of awareness of smelling something beautiful, it brings us into the present moment, which is an opening to the eternity, you know? And we're out of the mind for that particular moment when we're partaking of that divine gift, really, it is. And that's the way we can use our senses consciously, when we're consciously using them to, like you said, be transported. It's really, in a way, self-remembering.
Yeah.
So... thank you very much, Rebecca. Thank you. Hayden Brooks or Lynn?
Oh, it's Lynn this time.
Okay.
I want to piggyback on what Rebecca was saying and this idea of grounding the vertical and the horizontal. So on Saturday, Hayden and I were doing some volunteer work where we were taking voter registration door hanger tags and putting them on apartment door handles. And as I was putting these door handle tags on each door, something came over me and I just started silently saying a prayer at each door. And the prayer was, bless you, please vote. And it was just, it had no, you know, energy, or it didn't have a political party, or it didn't have, it just was this kind of feeling of blessing them and then encouraging them to vote. And then I sort of had a sense of, you know, as I went to each door, sometimes I would notice their welcome mat, or sort of think about the person inside the apartment, or so there was a sort of connection with the people as I was doing that task. And anyway, so that was one thing. Then the other was, I started thinking about our multi-day retreats that we would have at Cedar Break, and how when you go to Cedar Break for a multi-day retreat, you have to leave all those A influences in your car. You got to leave your phone. You've got to disconnect from really all the A influences. And that includes the wackadoodle people that you might have in your life, or at least I do, that can get in my head and create a whole lot of chaos. And, you know, it took me several years of going to these multi-day retreats to really realize that I had this perfect container while I was there, where my consciousness was entirely safe from the outside world, everything, you know, and all I was being given and fed were B and C influences. It was like, you know, it's like chemotherapy for, you know, your consciousness. You know, you're there and you're getting all that food. And that's why when you try to get on I-35, you're just so, you know, it's challenging. But it's so powerful that, and then just the understanding that we have control of our consciousness. I mean, that's within our control to determine what goes in. You know, my very first multi-day retreat, I got there and, you know, all those A influences that keep me, you know, occupied and keep me in denial of all the other things that I really need to look at were taken away. And, you know, it wasn't 24 hours where I was thinking, okay, I have got to get out of here. I am gonna make it. So I was there with myself and God. And so ultimately I was able to be talked off the ledge and stay. But I'm now seeing the retreats, you know, in the context of the work, and really how powerful they are, those multi-day retreats. You know, it's just anyway, it's something. So thank you.
Thank you. It's a good reminder, because now we're being asked to create that kind of container in our own lives right here. Mm-hmm. We've had practice. Now the rubber's hitting the road, right? So thank God for those retreat experiences, and we all pray that those will come back in the future. But yet, you know, how can we remove our consciousness? How can we be with ourselves in the midst of all these very intense influences and impressions, and still keep our center? You know, and really partaking in the B and C influences is what does it. And we'll talk more about that this evening as well. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you.
Pam, please.
Yeah. Hello?
I hear you.
Okay.
There you are.
Well, I was fortunate to participate in an online weekend spiritual retreat. And it was full of B and C influences and poetry and music and movement and conscious sharing and holy writings, so many. But one struck me really deeply, and that was the facilitator speaking about breath. And I've been doing breath work through yoga, and it's been an introduction to my meditation for years. But she shared that when she had her children, she had an image of God, when that child took its first breath, of God going and breathing into that child's mouth. And then when she sat with her brother as he was dying, and she saw him and heard him exhale his final breath, she had the image of God inhaling and taking his being back into the holy. And it was such a powerful image that it has really been a vestibule that I've used since then to enter into centering prayer, and something that I've thought about deeply, because in the work, we know that breath is one of the foods that we take in and that we use. And it just brought it to a different level of experience and impression than any I'd ever had before. And I was so very grateful for it.
That's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Thank you very much. Yeah. Paying attention, the breath is so much, we take it for granted. And if we meditate on the breath, I think it reveals a lot to us. And it being the breath of God, really, I mean, we're being breathed, you know. We don't do it. I mean, we can do it consciously. It's sort of under our control, but we are being breathed. Thank you. Tracy, please.
Hello. I resonate with what everybody's sharing here tonight, and how valuable this homework has been in looking at how I can consume less A influences. And just by making some shifts, you know, the space that creates the kind of the recapture of energy, and just the different level of being. I think the piece that I'll add to the conversation is that I learned is that how important it is to make efforts to feed myself B and C influences intentionally. And to provide a little context, I'll say that, you know, I've been kind of stuck in this, you know, I think we've all been stuck in this Groundhog Day experience of the field or the diversity of impressions we take in has gotten really narrow. As we are at home, or at least for me, home all the time. And my days just feel, it just feels like a constant cycle of, you know, you get up, you do your sit, you talk to your work partner, you walk the dog, you know, you, and then I go into my 8 hours of Zoom meetings, and then, you know, and then there's the evening routines, and then it, and it's just all over, and it's just this, and it's like this same. And I think that the smaller amount of impressions have helped me see myself more and see how I am addicted to this variety of A influences that keeps me, you know, is enough creates enough interest that it keeps me asleep and unaware. So, you know, typically in a pre-COVID world, I would have enough different things coming into my week, events or travel or, you know, things that just feel unique about that week. And all that has gone. So what I've been working with is just really not letting it be Groundhog Day, but really taking in those impressions differently in just the really small ways of as I walk the dog or as I go for a run or as I'm on the phone with one of my children or just looking at objects around the house. And Lynn's lovely sharing last week of plates, you know, I you know, everything has a little beauty and a little sweetness to offer us. So just really appreciate the invitation to open our eyes and to feed ourselves B and C influence that are coming to us, even if it may look like an A on the surface.
Yes, yes. That's so good because we can see B influences in A influences, like you were saying. If we really look, if we have the eyes to see, and because when we're rushing around and so distracted, we don't really see what's around us. In our environment, we don't appreciate it, so to speak. These things, all of these things in our lives, I mean, just our stuff has been supporting us all this time, and we take it all for granted. And now that we're with it all the time, it's like you said, it can drive you nuts, or you can see it in a new way. And I love how you described that you made that your practice. I think that's really important in these times. And as you were speaking too, I thought of all the people who are in prison. Their lives are always like that. And what do they see from day to day? It's a crucible. You know, it's a retort. That's work talks about that. It's a place for transformation, every place. When we are alone with ourselves, it's like you said, it's a chance for us to see ourselves in new ways, to see where our addictions are, what we're drawn to, our level of will, our level of attention. It's really important. Thank you so much, Tracy. Thank you. Rachel, you'll be our last one. Thank you.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. I am so excited to share this because it's kind of blown me away how space has been cleared out in my life. Space has been made for what I just intuit is more B and C influences. And what happened is there's this ridiculous reality TV show that I was obsessed with. It was like the number one rated show for stay-at-home moms or something like that. And I couldn't wait to watch it at night. Like, it was this show that I just couldn't wait. Can't emphasize that enough, obviously. So without directly trying, it wasn't like I'm going to stop watching this show. I was watching it. But then in doing the work and, you know, just this intention of hunger to be one with the divine and grow in that relationship, it was pretty much overnight. I just stopped wanting to watch it. And I'm still shocked that I don't want to watch it anymore. And I would watch like one episode, you know, if I can make it through. I have two young kids, so it's not like I was up binging on it. It was just the pull to it that is no longer there. So I'm really grateful and still a little bit shocked. Grateful to be available even more so. And I will continue to have that intention, and how it manifests in my life, I don't know, and I'm okay with that. And it's really nice for that space to be cleared without me trying to like make it happen, if that makes sense. It just mm-hmm. is happening, and I'm just grateful. So, yeah.
How does that, if you look at how you felt when you watched the show, versus when you're not, do you notice a difference?
I do. I think it was the adrenaline that surrounded it that I really wasn't too aware of. Like that I don't need to be in that riled up kind of state, or, and I didn't really think it was that, but now when you ask this question, it's being able to go to bed at night and and just be more centered. I don't really do centering prayer at night. It's usually morning and afternoon, but that's the difference that I notice in my body. And I'm a recovering addict, so I know a lot about addiction and, you know, being pulled by something, and been sober for a long time. But with I can see that there was a, I guess probably a familiarity around that adrenaline that came with watching those kinds of shows, or watching that show in particular. Sorry, that was a long answer to your question.
No, that's good. That makes perfect sense. I was just curious because I know for me, it's this thing that almost attaches to me. You know, mm-hmm. I have to watch it, or I have to do this, and then it's hard to not think about.
Yeah,
you know. Kind of takes over your mind.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It lives with you. And right. I just like, in comparing my history with addiction, like initially I had to, you know, make an effort to not have that in my life. And then, but with this show, I wouldn't have said it was an addiction, that I just don't have a need for it anymore.
Yes.
Like it was just a falling away that, right. I don't know. Like I really, it's very powerful for me, or it just really touched me, I think. Yeah.
It sounds to me like the work of the spirit in you, that it's just, yeah.
For yeah. sure.
It's like when we see things, when we see through to things, when there's understanding, then things fall away. You know, we don't have to change our behaviors. But, and it might, you know, you might have seen something totally unrelated to this particular topic, which it sounds like, you know, who knows, whatever work you've been doing on yourself, then this little string got pulled and all the other things just fall away. So that's mm-hmm. wonderful. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for letting me share.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Cynthia, I see you have your hand up, but, we need to move on because we're at that time. So I hope that maybe you'll share later on when there's some time. So we'll move on to our topic tonight, which is on reciprocal maintenance, the economy of sacrifice. And as Marianne said, we've been taking this journey through the cosmology and just going from this, seeing the vastness of it, the laws within it, and to seeing just how generous it is, how loving, and how we're given the opportunity to grow And just this giving and receiving that's part of it. So I'm going to share my screen here. Okay. So there's many beautiful things in this email, especially this image that I've lived with for a long time now. And it's been interesting to study this, and this has come alive more than it has for me before. So I'm grateful for this study. So start with, what is reciprocal maintenance? And this is a quote from the actual email. In the ecosystem of all creation, called by Gurdjieff the Trogo Auto-Egocrat, there are no closed systems. Everything belongs, everything is in dynamic relationship, and cosmic harmony is sustained by the giving and receiving of energy by all beings. We are sustained and we sustain, right? Truly, everything belongs. And this interesting word from Gurdjieff, Trogo Auto-Egocrat, it's from his amazing book, The Tales, Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson. And he has many, many other words like that in there. But interestingly, the beginning of that word, Trogo Auto-Egocrat, which refers to this whole economy of reciprocal maintenance. Trogo is a Greek word that means to chew, to gnaw, to eat slowly, which is really kind of a good introduction to the diagram that is in the email, which Gurdjieff labeled the diagram of everything living, or what we know more commonly as a step diagram. And there's a lot to this diagram. It's something to ponder. For our purposes, what we need to know basically is that it's a diagram of beings and what those beings eat and what they are eaten by. And Jackie alluded to that. So just very briefly, Gurdjieff developed this system of beings, which here are all the names. Here we are, human, man, here. And in this each square, there are three numbers, which refer to hydrogens, which we've talked about, levels of energy, vibratory level, however you want to look at it. The numbers aren't really important, except that they indicate something. So the number that's the furthest to the left in each of the squares is the general, the average hydrogen of that level of being. So this diagram says our average vibratory level is 24. Angels 12, archangels 6, and so on down this step diagram. The top number indicates what we feed the beings, the level of beings that we are food for, in this case, archangels, as Jackie said. The bottom number is the level of beings which we feed on, which in this case is invertebrates, which is interesting. Let it be said that there's not a lot of written teaching on this diagram from Gurdjieff or Uspensky. Uspensky in In Search of the Miraculous says that he gave it to them and didn't talk much more about it. And I just hear in the commentaries, if you're interested in reading a commentary on it, Nickel does write about it in volume 3 on page 1103. He does talk about it. And it looks like this. It looks a little bit different. He adds a couple of things, takes away a couple of things, but it's basically the same diagram. again, it's not necessary for our purposes to really delve into it at this point. If you're interested in it, you'll see at the bottom of the email with the homework, there is a reference to some work that J.G. Bennett did on it. It's quite a rabbit hole to go down. But, you know, if that's interesting to you, you can do that. So, but just to see that there are many, many levels of beings below us that support us, like Jackie said, and there are beings above us that would like to feed on us. But this diagram, I believe, directly connects with the diagram of the ray of creation and the side octave, which I wanted to bring back for today. So if you remember, the great ray, this is a depiction of the great ray, is a descending octave from Do, or the absolute, down, a descending through. And at level Sol, which is level of all suns, where our sun is, our sun, S-U-N-S-O-N, creates this lateral octave, the side octave, so that we can provide the shock at this mi-fa interval, so the work says, so that the energies coming down the great ray can come through to the earth and the moon. And if you remember that this side octave looks like a cross, which I think is so beautiful, that this level of La Sol Fa refers to the film of organic life around the earth. That is a transmitting substance that transmits these energies, that transmutes them, that changes them so that they feed the earth and the moon. So what is our part in this? What is our part? So two terms in the email, which I hadn't heard the first one before, is that this descending ray here is involution. It's where the energy, that creative impulse, comes from the absolute out, down, if you want to look at it, or from the absolute outwards to us. Or towards us. It's that creative impulse outward, where, and as it gets further and further away from the absolute, it becomes more dense. And then the other way, so that's the energy coming down. The other option is evolution. And we, as part of this psi octave, as human beings, we're given the option to ascend this ray or to increase in consciousness. Because if you remember, the sun wants something for itself. It wants to be fed. So do all human beings feed the sun? No, because really the work talks about that organic life transmits the energies, transforms it so it can be come down the ray to feed the earth and the sun, whether we are conscious or not. And what feeds the moon specifically is suffering. So if we're unconscious, we're asleep humanity, we're feeding the moon automatically. Nothing is wasted. It's lawful. And it serves, one would say it serves the evolution of the moon. But it doesn't feed the sun, S-U-N-S-O-N. As it says, humans are obliged to contribute transformed energy to the involving universe, the descending octave. And Gurdjieff talked about passive humanity, which I would say is asleep humanity, right? Mechanical humanity, through unconscious suffering, just suffering with no consciousness. Active humans, he says, serves evolution. So when we are awaking, when we wish for something else, when we see that life doesn't serve us for anything real, then we have the option to evolve, to participate in co-creation with Christ, to feed the body of Christ. And so through our sacrifice of our suffering, our conscious sacrifice, our conscious suffering, participating in conscious labors and intentional suffering, suffering our suffering, so to speak, we don't feed the physical moon, but we create a moon in ourselves. Instead of feeding the lower forces, the lower energies below us, we create a receptacle for higher energies in ourselves. And I should have brought in the food octave, the food diagrams here, because if you remember that, if you bring that to mind, that when we bring the first conscious shock up to the place of incoming impressions, that all three of the foods that we take in, food for our bodies, the food of air, the food of impressions, they all are digested completely. Do you remember that diagram? Those three lines, beautiful curving lines that go down and they end up creating hydrogen 12 or finer energies. Where are they stored? Well, one could look at it as that we're creating this moon in ourselves. Why a moon? Because a moon, when we think of in the sense of the physical moon, it balances the earth, right? It's a balance for us. It creates gravity. Well, if we're creating moon in ourselves through these storing these finer energies, we create a center of gravity in ourselves where we can then use that energy, lift it up to feed the body of Christ, but also use it for our own transformation. Instead of that energy passing through this losal fa down to the moon or the lower forces, which need to be fed, which you can see is why it's one of those things in the work that I always used to, it still kind of bothers me that not everyone can have this information, because if all of humanity became conscious, what would happen? The moon wouldn't be fed. No, we wouldn't serve great nature anymore. So it's in great nature's interest for us not to wake up. I don't know. Can I verify that? No. What I can see is, like the work says, not everyone wants it. I mean, that's clear. So many people are so hypnotized, as I can be, by A influences, by life. So by doing our work on ourselves, we create this center of gravity that keeps us grounded at these times, like now, of these very intense influences and impressions that are coming in. We create that moon by doing our work, by taking in B and C influences, by sacrificing our suffering, and by giving to others, by sharing. And I'd like to stop at this point. Would anyone like to make any comments on that section so far? Any reflections or anything on the ray? Anything that you've heard so far. Be happy to hear anything that you might have to say.
Bev, can I speak? I don't have the raised function.
Absolutely,
raised hand function.
Yes.
So it occurs to me that by making moon in yourself, so to speak, you in fact are lifting. You are lifting the lowest and fulfilling a cosmic holding, if you will. You are lifting up the lowest and incorporating it as an offering through your own self, your own self. So you're doing the work on behalf of all humanity, all creation, all that is the lowest of the low, so to speak. Including that which is in yourself and outside of yourself and the whole, the all of it. It's a cosmic holding.
Yes. Yes. That's beautifully put. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. It's not that we're just serving ourselves, which sometimes it can sound like, you know, that we're only doing this for ourselves, but we're not at all. And I think we've made that, we've all seen that very clearly through this journey, through the cosmology and through everything we've studied here, that our work matters. It matters to humanity. Yes. Michael, please. Thank you, Marianne.
Hi.
Hi.
I was looking at the step diagram anew when you had it on the screen. And I thought, that's only part of the story. Yeah, so there's a part that says, well, archangels, you know, we are food for archangels. But I was thinking, there's that old saying, you are what you eat. And how true that is. And that there are not only archangels who wish to feed on us, if that's accurate in the work, but there are also parasitic influences that wish to feed on us and do. And I know in my own experience, so this is the part that I can verify, right? So if I look at the influences that I eat, I mean, we'll take physical food out of it and air. Let's just, you know, focusing on influences. If I look at the influences that I take in, the influences that I eat, that changes to me. It changes my chemistry, my biology, my thinking. And I become more like those things. If I am taking in BNC influences more and doing that intentionally, then my being is in training toward that. And similarly, if I'm, I am so not immune to the news. And I mean, it takes about 3 seconds of news and I'm in hell. And I realize that there is something, I mean, it's poisoning me. But there's something there that is feeding off of me. There is this system of polarization and divisiveness and division that is feeding off of me when I go there, when I take that in. And with other influences, there are energies of unity and wholeness that are feeding off of me. And what do I want to give myself to?
Yeah. As you were saying that, when you talked about polarization, what I felt too is that those influences also then create this polarization in myself, this pull to want to know more of that, you know, or give my attention. I mean, pay with my life, basically. We were talking, JC was talking about that. Mm-hmm. It is, we're paying with our soul, and it creates this war, internal war. I know in me sometimes, if I partake of too many A influences like that, it's like it creates a resistance to wanting to take in something higher. And then this, like, I got to have more of that kind of thing. It's, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That's a good distinction. Thank you, Michael. Jim Motes, please.
Yes, I'm a little confused, and I appreciate it if you could expand on the variety of meanings associated with what does feeding on us mean?
What does feeding on us?
Yeah. What does feeding on us mean?
So you mean in relation to like the step diagram?
In relationship to Michael's comments, and because I can see how it could mean, it could be determined or could be seen through a negative viewpoint, but it might also be positive.
Yes, yes, and I think that's what we're saying, that when we we partake in negative influences, say. Do you know how if you, like what Michael was describing, when you read the or see the news and you kind of go to hell internally, you get very identified with that. It creates this energy that's kind of a negative energy. So that's what we kind of mean by feeding the moon. We're actually feeding with our energy. We're giving energy to that negative or the lower energies in us or and even in the world. We're adding to that density of energy that's a pull down, so to speak. Does that make sense? And
Well, it does. But then in the diagram, you know, I'm feeding, right? The
archangels. Yes. So. Yes. Right. And yeah, well, that's my question about the diagram. Is that a definite or is it not? Because it seems like the side octave says something different. I don't know. But it seems to me that when I take in B and C influences, my being feels very different. It doesn't feel heavy. It doesn't feel dense. And so I feel like Marianne said, we uplift everybody, but also we're feeding. So the work says we're giving our energies. We're feeding something that's above us in consciousness. I've also seen it as feeding the body of Christ in a way.
So would it be right to say that this organic film that's on its earth, when it's in its best form, it's exchanging finer energies with each other and feeding things above?
Well, yes, possibly. My understanding is that organic life is to feed the earth and the moon. And of course we must be feeding each other. I mean,
because there's an exchange, right?
Yes, there's an exchange of energies for sure. Whether other levels of beings on the planet besides us have the option of feeding something higher, I don't know. But I certainly would like to think that, wouldn't you?
Well, my dog feeds me.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And we can feel that. It's something to ponder. And can we verify it? I don't know. You can work on verifying it for yourself, though. Okay. Thank you, Jim. Interesting question for sure. Billy, please. Oh, boy.
Hello.
Hey.
So I really have a question because you made a comment, Bev, about something about, I'm not sure I'm going to get this wording correct, but something about how if all of humanity became conscious that, I can't remember how you put it, but no, that we wouldn't it wouldn't work. Basically, because the moon needs to be fed, and something about, I don't know, it seems to me that if everybody was lifted up and became more conscious, that would bring everything up, the earth, the moon, everything. And so I'm just confused a little bit about what you said, and I'm hoping you would just...
Yeah. So am I. It's what you said definitely makes more sense to me. This is what Gurdjieff put out in the work, that it doesn't serve great nature for everyone, all of humanity, to evolve in consciousness, because then the lower wouldn't be served or wouldn't get those energies that it needs. I don't know. I don't know how to verify that.
I don't understand that at all. So, okay. I'll just be okay with that.
It's one of those things to wonder about in the work. Yeah. Yeah. So, just to remember that we have the option You know, we can choose what we want to feed in any moment and pay with our attention. And boy, time went flying here. One thing I did want to mention for the next part of the email talks about ways in which we can transform energies, become transubstantiation elements, so to speak. We become transformers of energy for the higher good and for the good of all humanity. There are six things listed there. They're self-explanatory, so you can look at that. The other thing I did want to point out that wasn't there was, because this was given to me, I just happened to pick up the July mark, and it was, I read Anna's message on the mystery of the Eucharist, and which was beautiful. Thank you, Anna, if you're out there. And she pointed to Bernadette Roberts. So I thought it was interesting that Marianne read Bernadette at the beginning, but that it just speaks to this feeding so much. And I just wanted to read just a little bit from the Real Christ on Bernadette, from Bernadette's section on the Eucharist. And this is how we're transformed. Just as the ordinary bread we eat is transformed into our body. So think of the diagram of the food diagrams. In similar fashion, when we eat the bread of life, we are transformed into Christ's body. It is not we who consume Christ, but Christ that consumes us, transforming and incorporating our human nature into its own glorified human nature. That's what we want to feed. And we can do that. We can become that, well, become what we are, really, by participating in the Eucharist. And the Eucharist, it doesn't have to be at church or on Sundays. I mean, we really could partake in the Eucharist every time we put something into our mouth. If we were to remember that this piece of bread, this piece of whatever we're eating, salad, is Eucharist for us. Christ is consuming us with that intention. So that's such a beautiful way, too, to understand this. And I'm going to share my screen here again one last time. I want to end with this quote before the homework, which really just says it so beautifully. This is Ilya Delio from the meditation in the email. We are united to Christ by entering into communion with all life. We will be saved by an option that has chosen the whole. A greater good does not come about by cheap grace. To paraphrase Dietrich Bonhoeffer, costly love is making a new future through mercy, forgiveness, and sacrifice. There can be no movement toward a new level of existence, however, without a transformation in consciousness, a change in mind and heart. So this all comes back again, that the change has to happen here in us first. If we're going to see a transformed world, it has to happen here. It has to happen here. May it be so. And our homework, read this email several times throughout the week with a disposition of receptivity and deep listening, allowing the impressions to flow into you. Explore sacrifice, being a living transformer for the transubstantiation of energy in any or all of the ways listed in the email. What emotions, thoughts, physical gestures, or facial expressions might be useful to sacrifice? Self-observe, non-identify, self-remember. That last one should be fun. And then there's the resource for that, the Bennett work on the step diagram. So thank you all, and blessings on your work this week. Back to you, Marianne.
Thank you so much, Beth. It was wonderful. A closing word from Rodney Collin. We must open and say, the Lord is there. Blessed be the Lord. To close the door and say, Lord, take away the darkness, is an offense to God. The sun shines and God made it. All the world testifies to the presence of God. God says to us, you have will. Open your eyes and look at me. We do not need to say, I will seek God, when all the time God is seeking us. If I know that one day I shall see God, if I think of that, how can I help but smile with happiness? If I am shown day and night all the beautiful things there are in the world, surely I should smile. If I see children coming, and they are the true thing, life is coming, the future, and for that I ought to smile. Our heart is a mirror in which we see the reflection of the world. If God is in our heart, we see God everywhere. And so it is. And we can pray and know that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.